podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, Culés. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. And in today's episode, we get ready for the Clásico as Roy Nemmer from Mundo Albiceleste joins me. But before we get into that conversation, a quick word from our sponsor, NordVPN. Are you tired of hackers and cybercriminals snooping around your online activities? Do you want to safely access your favorite shows and content from anywhere in the world? Then you need NordVPN, the best VPN on the market. And the good news is that there's an exclusive birthday deal just for you. Buy NordVPN now and win extra subscription time. With NordVPN, you can protect your online activity and keep your private information away from prying eyes. And if you're traveling abroad, don't worry. Connect to a NordVPN server in your home country and safely enjoy content as if you never left. So what are you waiting for? Visit nordvpn.com/Barca now to get this special birthday deal. Shield your data from snoops and criminals with NordVPN's state-of-the-art encryption. Safely listen to podcasts, stream shows, or simply browse in complete privacy. Again, visit nordvpn.com/Barca. The link is in the show notes. Get NordVPN now and enjoy a safe and private online experience. All right, so we're getting ready for the Clásico. Roy Nemmer joins me from Mundo Albiceleste. I've been practicing that. Roy, we have a lot of things to get into about the Clásico, but first we gotta talk Argentina really quick, because how great was that?
It's still great. It's absolutely still great. How great? It's still for now, then, forever and ever for all of eternity. It was something. I remember you and I, the last time we spoke about it, I told you Argentina have a good chance. Then there was a freak match. And then the final itself, I want to say shaved off like 98 years off my life or something, because I'm still alive. But it was a good match. It was some final.
So let me ask you, where did you watch the final? Are you the type of person that needs to watch the match by yourself because it's such an important match? Or did you watch it with friends and family and just kind of enjoy that moment?
No. I'm very superstitious. I can't. Well, superstition aside, I don't enjoy watching matches with other people, depending on
the case. Yeah.
I really don't. So this one, I was sitting down watching it, all alone. I would get text messages. I would reply like halftime and then, right before the penalty kicks. And that was it. I can't watch it with other people. It's too like, I don't know. People always make comments and, oh, but why did you do this? Why did you do that?
I'm like,
shut up. I don't want to be. Let me just. But no, I watched it alone. Like I said, superstitious. So the same seat, same everything as I watched from the Mexico match forward. Same thing, same everything.
Yeah, I don't know if you listen or I told you, but I was watching it on the airplane going back to the States, and I planned the World Cup final. Like, I just totally forgot, and I could have just gone the next day, right? I could have gone the next day. Like, I had no, sure, like I go back home a day earlier, great, but I would have preferred to watch the World Cup here final with some of my friends from Argentina, because I think that would have been epic. But I watched on the plane. And it was live and was awesome because everyone was cheering for Argentina. And I think really what it comes down to is just that I didn't, it's one of those things that, I know there's a lot of Messi fans. I see it, I hear it, whatever. But when you see it in that atmosphere where it was almost like a silent disco, where everyone had the headphones and everyone's cheering at the same time. And everyone was just cheering when Argentina scored. So, and most people weren't from Argentina. So, it is that thing of Messi kind of connecting, fans, for this moment. And obviously it was an epic final.
Yeah, even if you talk to neutrals, right, people that don't care about Messi or don't care about France or Argentina, most if not all will tell you this was probably the best World Cup final, at least in recent memory, right, at least in the past 30, 40, 50 years or so. Nothing came close. The drama, you had the two best players in the world, Mbappe, you have Messi. It's, it's cliche at this point, but is it really the last dance? Is this it? Is he going to win it? Or is Mbappe just going to shatter the dreams and, go on to become, to grow his legendary status as a player? And then all the drama from 2-0 to 2-2 to 3-2
to 3-3,
it's nuts.
No, to me, it's the greatest final just because of all the roller coaster of emotions that happen. And then on top of that, the clinical penalty kick taking of Argentina, 5 for 5. I mean, that is like to do that twice in the tournament is unheard of, you know? And man, like, and I love that Messi went first. I love that idea of, you know, the best players going first. I think that's a tweak that national teams are going to go for. Well, I mean, I know you were on cloud nine, and obviously I brought you on to talk Clasico, but I just, you know, I wanted to just kind of get a quick catch up on that because I know, you know, we were talking during the World Cup and we were talking about, you know, Croatia and other teams. I think what was the team we had pinned as like one of the, I can't remember right now at the top of my head, but we were like, yeah, it's going to be this team.
I think I had Argentina, Brazil in the semifinals.
Yeah.
I think I had Argentina, Brazil. And then when Croatia won, I was like, okay, so pretty confident Argentina is going to make the final now, but
yeah.
I'll keep this to myself.
I mean, it was a great tournament. You know, I wish, you know, it's still my favorite sporting event, but I just wish it gets moved to the summertime because the winter time was so weird. It was so weird in this break.
It was different for sure. It was absolutely different. But you know what? I didn't mind it too much. I really didn't, just because maybe it's summertime, people tend to have more plans. You want to go out, you want to do this, you want to do that. And because of the time difference, it's difficult at times. Like, well, I can't do this because there's a match and I want to watch. So winter for me, result aside, which I absolutely adored, obviously, but winter for me wasn't bad. I wouldn't be against it happening again, but obviously, you know, a more traditional World Cup is what we're used to.
I just miss being out, you know, especially like here in Spain where the games are shown in the bar. It just kind of has a different atmosphere as opposed to the winter time. In the winter time, no one really goes out as much. So, all right, let's talk. We got Clasico this weekend. And before we get into some of the, you know, the matchups and some of the things you're going to be looking at, we had a topic in our Patreon community, and I've seen this in other on tweets and stuff about how lucky Madrid was to get Chelsea in this Champions League. And I'm really don't like this spin because Real Madrid continue to prevail in Champions League, which most teams can't, right? And there's something to their DNA that they're able to do that. You can call it luck, but you know, luck to me is okay, maybe one or two matches. But when you're talking about a 10-year span, it goes past luck. So what is your feeling about this idea that culés are griping about the draw and how lucky Madrid is to get Chelsea, for example, and that kind of point of view that culés are positioning themselves as saying, oh, look, you know, to try to diminish, you know, what Real Madrid is doing in the Champions League, essentially.
Yeah, look, honestly speaking, I don't like it. Credit to Madrid. I dislike Madrid as much as anyone else. Trust me. Trust me when I say that. But you got to give the devil their due.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to in this case. People want to say they were lucky to get Chelsea. With all due respect, all the respect in the entire world, we got Manchester United and blew it, right? You're going to tell me if we would have gotten Chelsea, we would have won or something. And it could have been easier on paper for Madrid, right? You look at maybe an AC Milan or a Benfica or whoever, but it could have been maybe more difficult, right? With a Bayern or Manchester City. But you're, you know, something I always say, you play against whoever you're put up against. Right, they got put against Chelsea. Chelsea right now are in a decent run of form. They've finally, you know, been able to win a couple of matches, string some matches in a row now, some wins. So who knows? Who knows, man? One injury, one yellow card, one this, one that, and everything changes. And again, credit to them. They know how to win. If you look at what they did last year, just to get to the final, just against City alone, forget what they did against Chelsea. It's impressive. It's impressive, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's kind of this idea that we're so jaded, you know, and it's like we couldn't even get through Europa League. You know, how are we going to be calling this lucky like this? And again, I just can't get a read with Madrid because, you know, we've seen the inconsistency that they do in league. And obviously with Barcelona's success recently against Madrid. So you're kind of like, okay. And then you see how Madrid manhandled Liverpool. I mean, they made Liverpool look like an amateur team, essentially. And I'm really confused about how Madrid just turned it up. I mean, as I said, I mean, it's very impressive because, you know, I always put La Liga just a little bit more important, but both are important, right? Champions League and La Liga, especially around the world and in Europe. I don't know. I just, I, you know, it's crazy because they're one of the only teams left from La Liga in this tournament, which is crazy. The other thing really crazy, Roy, is you know how much money Chelsea has spent this year on players?
I know how much they spent on a player, yeah. With Enzo Fernandez. But they spent, what, I think like 300 or 200 and something? 300? More, way more, five, more 400, more, 500? More. 400 and some or so?
600, man.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean,
it's crazy, no?
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
we could certainly use some of them.
Can you imagine about that type of money in transfer windows of both the summer and the winter and basically missing? I mean, really,
yeah.
I mean, they haven't really hit on anything yet, per se, no. You know?
No.
All right. Yeah, so let's go into Sunday's match. How are you feeling? Does it feel less important, or is it just – it's still important. It's just different players, and it still has that importance because La Liga is basically on the line here.
No, it's still very important. Very. We're talking about, what, a 9-point difference, I think, going on right now, and a shift in momentum. You never know what happens. If Madrid somehow gets the win, it's now 6 points. That's 2 games. Granted, we're out of the Europa League and all that stuff, but it could still be that shift in momentum. And we've seen ourselves, right, capitulate at certain times in the season. Oh, when Xavi put out that lineup against United in the first leg, thinking, well, he's saving the players for Cadiz, what's going to happen there? And we ended up losing that one. So even us, sometimes it's difficult to tell. For this one, it's very important because if you win this, now you're really creating the gap, right? Then it's okay. We're talking about double digits here. It's not just 9 points. And then that's our main focus, Copa del Rey aside. It's different players for sure. So who knows kind of what we're going to get. I'm hoping we get a good performance. A lot of the players have to show up. They have to step up. It's absolutely a must. And no, this is a must win for us. This is, I'm not going to say the season's on the line. No, you know, that may be a bit of an exaggeration, but it's definitely a must win.
Yeah. I mean, if they lose, all of a sudden the sphincters get a little tighter, right? A little tighter on that. So yeah, great transition on this. So who for you needs to step up that maybe hasn't been stepping up as of late, or maybe needs a moment in this match to really propel Barcelona to get those 3 points?
It's got to be, I mean, you always look at your target man, right? It's got to be Lewandowski. He started the season just on fire, the amount of goals he was scoring. And now since Argentina have won the World Cup, since he faced Argentina, and his goals have dried up. Right? He's
scored two goals
since the restart, and he has to. And this is a big statement. I can't remember the last time he scored a big goal, you know, in a big game like this. He needs it. If you get him, who's your leader up front, the most experienced, you look to him to get the goals. If he's able to get one, and that could really play onto the team's momentum and their, you know, their mental strength of, okay, our leader up front, the veteran, got us the goal. Let's keep going. He's on fire. Let's keep giving him the ball, send him the crosses, do the 1-2s, do what you got to do. It might be cliche to always look at your number nine, you know, your main target man, but in this case, I think you have to.
I mean, considering, you know, we've won 4 or 5, and I basically would say that we've been playing with a flat tire in attack, you know, with the lack of goals, and to be able to still get those points that we have, I would definitely agree with you, because I think it's Lewandowski's time to shine. They're, you know, one of the reasons he wanted to come to Barcelona was to play in this big match, right? And I just saw an interview today where he was talking about how he's so happy in Barcelona. He wanted to come here because he had faith in the project and so forth. But like you said, since the World Cup, he's looked a little ragged to me, a little bit just, you know, tired a little bit. And the other thing I've noticed, I don't know if you've seen this as much in the last couple matches too, is that his willingness to come up to the midfield to get the ball. And I think that is a no-no. You're shaking your head. See, this is why, you know, I feel like we're like, you know, right here connected. Yeah. The thing is, you know, I think maybe 5 years ago, okay, you do that, right? Because he can get back there quick. But I think a lot of times what's happening is like when the ball gets released to Rafinha, for example, and he starts to go up, he has no one in the middle to help him and protect her. You've seen the same thing.
Yeah. And he's 34 now?
Yeah.
So it's nice to see him want to do that, but at the same time, it's counterproductive.
Right? Yeah.
Because like you said, whether it's Rafinha, Ferran Torres, Ansu Fati, whoever it is that's playing up front, you get to the front, okay, let's say Rafinha beats his man. Well, he looks in the in the area, in the penalty area, there's no one. Lewandowski's not there yet. He's still jogging forward. So that is an issue. Hopefully it's something, you know, you saw it, I saw it. Hopefully something Xavi sees and kind of instructs him to, look, stay up front, try and get the best out of Rudiger or Militao, see what you could do, because we're going to need it. You know, we have some good wingers. They obviously have some good wingers, and we got to make the best of our opportunities.
Yeah, the other thing too is, you know, as I call it, the center back pocket. You know, I think Lewandowski is a master of that, of being able to manipulate that area. And I just think that, you know, we have to go back to basics with him for that. You know, I think, like you said, it is nice that he wants to be involved in the play, but I feel a lot of times since we are countering, he's coming all the way back to midfield. And then, like you said, trying to recoup, and Rafinha is already up there waiting, yeah. You know, essentially, and it kind of just drags the attack. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the matchup, obviously, of Araujo and Vinicius. Obviously, Araujo has been stellar in the Clásico against Vinicius. But now, you know, we've seen, you know, a bunch of times this matchup. What is the counter to this counter? Does Madrid maybe move Vinicius up to the center maybe? Or do they just try their luck and say, yeah, it was two matches, but Vinicius will break through?
Well, that's an interesting one. I wouldn't play him on the wing against Araujo. I certainly wouldn't. The Uruguayan knows how to get the best out of him. For whatever reason it may be, whenever Vinicius comes up against a South American defender, be it Araujo or Foyth, for example, at Villarreal, they know how to shut him down. Maybe it's the physicality. Maybe it's, you know, they're familiar with each other because of the South American game. But then again, you look at Vinicius and you say he's having a pretty good season, right? Personally speaking, on a personal level, he's doing very, very well. So do you risk it? What I would maybe do if I were, you know, Ancelotti, which in a way, thank God I'm not, I would start him on the wing. I'd start him against Araujo, see how it goes the first two attacks. If that doesn't work, put him down the middle, change it up and try something, because he hasn't been a threat at all in the past two games against us, which is a good thing. And then, you know, credit to Araujo and what he's done.
I mean, Araujo is just, I can watch him defend for days. Yeah. He does. So many, like, just the fundamentals make look so easy, right? The thing I think is, you know, he has the stride length to keep up with Vinicius, obviously, so Vinicius just can't outrun him like he does with everyone else. But also, like, I think there's something to that physicality, that South American. Maybe he's just not intimidated because he's seen it for so long, you know, and been just in the South American qualifiers and so forth, so not really that bothered. Now, let's say with the midfield, you know, especially we just got news today that Pedri most likely is not going to be ready for the Clásico. Obviously, we've been missing him. Do we see a Sergio Roberto in the midfield? Hey, man, I'm just putting out what's out there, right?
I mean, yeah.
We obviously know that it's going to be Gavi, Frankie de Jong, and Busquets. But, Busquets, yeah. You know, I just don't know if maybe – you know, especially with the lack of form of Ferran Torres and Ansu Fati, maybe Xavi goes with another midfielder to protect and to have more possession in there. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not a bad idea. Obviously, the lack of form up front is worrying, and that could play into it. If that's the case, I would prefer someone maybe like Kessier, just to add that physicality as well. Pardon me, just add that physicality. He's pretty good on the ball, and he does get forward often, right? He sometimes misses some opportunities, but I think he's not a bad option to have, and I would certainly prefer him over Sergio Roberto. And it all depends. I think we're going to get the midfield three that you said. The loss of Pedri is going to be massive, especially when you consider how well he's done against Madrid this season. But anyone but Sergio Roberto at this point, I think we'll be better off.
You know, it's funny because on Wednesday's episode, I was just talking about some of our favorite Clásicos, and I was talking about my first Clásico. The only Clásico I went to was 2016, and I didn't really remember it that much because when I was at the stadium, it was so tense, and I just can't, like, it. You know, I was just watching Madrid win 2-1, But before I recorded, I watched the highlights, and I couldn't believe I was at this match because this is the height of, like, MSN. We got Bale, Benzema, young Modric. I mean, everyone, right? And I couldn't believe the speed. Even Sergio Roberto was fast in this match. And I was just like, wait, what's going on here, you know? And obviously, we're talking 7 years now, you know, six years difference. It obviously adds that But I think you have a good point there with Frank Kessié. I mean, you know, he has definitely improved. He's found his rhythm in the midfield. I think now if you were to pull 10 Kules, I think they would feel pretty confident with his ability in the midfield. I think at first, you know, he looked a little iffy. But like you said, the physicality that he brings, I think, is sometimes needed, especially to close out the matches. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic. And, we know that Xavi loves the 4-3-3 system to spread out all this stuff. But, you know, especially since we have lack of goal scoring, I think, you know, if I were to go into this match at first, maybe I would use two forwards as opposed to try to spread them, you know, and maybe have four midfields to protect. Because again, I'm just looking to I look at this situation as almost like, what's worst case scenario? We lose, right? We lose 3 points, right? What is a decent performance? 1 point. If we can get 1 point, I'm okay with that. And obviously even better if we get three. What is the, you know, with the play available, how am I going to get there, right? How am I going to get there? Maybe flooding the midfield. I don't know, just with the players. And this is going to lead me to my next question. How are you feeling about Ansu Fati? Because there's been a lot of fodder right now. You've seen it online and so forth about giving up on him and what is going on with him. How are you feeling about Ansu Fati lately?
Well, I feel sorry for the kid. Extremely talented. The injuries, never easy, especially at such a young age. But I think if we're going to be fair, and I might sound like a Dembele hater type of thing, but the amount of chances and the amount of patience that we've given to someone like Dembele, I think should be given to Ansu Fati. Just because, and he's still younger, right? And to be fair, it's tough. I know there's been talks about potentially selling him and him being transferred and leaving the club. It's all a matter of injuries. You know, if he could stay fit, if he could stay healthy, it's there. I think it's just a confidence issue at this point. And it's difficult, man. It's tough. You know, we've seen players. I mentioned Dembele. When he first joined the club, he was healthy. And then every five games or something, he'd get injured. And then he'd play a game, play very well, play badly for 3-4 games, get injured. And he came with a price tag. He certainly came with a price tag. Ansu Fati has that number 10 shirt, the pressure that was on him, especially when Messi left. I would give him a bit more time. I would certainly give him a bit more time to develop. Maybe Xavi could get the best out of him as well. And he's still very young, man. He's still very, very raw. And the talent, the potential is there. That's what's scary, is the age and the potential. And you want to give that away for what?
Yeah, that I feel the same way. I mean, again, you have to remind yourself he's 20. He's 20. It just feels that he's older because he's been in our lives for so long, right? He burst out to the scene basically at 17, 18, this type of thing. I mean, think about your life when you were at 20 years old. Could you think about, you know, I just think about my career. How many times I've changed jobs and careers? I'm 45, like 5 times at least, you know? And to have this pressure, you know, that everyone wants for you. And like you said, I really hope that it is something more psychological. That's something that, you know, maybe like motivation, just seeing goals come in just turns that switch. But again, I also think there's something to this, that he needs to find the counter to the counter now, right? He needs to find something else. And maybe there's also something too that his partnership with, let's say, Lewandowski, the movement there, it's not there, right? And maybe it's because lack of games, this type of idea. But I just think you have enough track record of Ansu's goal scoring ability that you can't just throw that away, because that's going to go to my next question. I mean, you think about Ansu's scoring ability before and Ferran Torres, right? To me, yeah, exactly. So I was at the match a couple of weeks ago, and Ferran Torres is a physical specimen. Like, he's definitely a big guy, moves around the box, has good dribbling techniques. But again, at what point do you need goals? You know what I'm saying? Like, at what point do you stop waiting and you're just like, you cut your losses? Because he's definitely up for a player in the summertime, and especially like in the Clásico, where, you know, we are desperate need of some wing play and some goals. And, you know, we're just talked about, like, do you sacrifice the wing play of Ferran to bring in a midfield, because Ferran is just not bringing anything in a goal scoring capacity?
Yeah, he was one of those guys. I was very excited when, you know, when he came in from City. I was like, all right, nice. You know, he wasn't starting for City, wasn't getting too many games. He's going to come to Barcelona. He'll light it up. And then with Rafinha and Lewandowski, and it's very exciting. And I don't know what's going on with him, man. I don't know if it's just a lack of confidence. I don't know if it's just the ability, because like you said, he works hard, right? He has the movement and everything. It's just a lack of goals, and it's a killer. And this stretch, the final stretch of the season, so to speak, right? We're pretty much there now, middle of March. Not only just the Madrid match, but after that, because if, for whatever reason, let's say Barcelona, knock on wood, don't get the 3 points or don't win against Madrid, and then the gap is down to six, then you absolutely need the goals. And I know we spoke about Lewandowski earlier, but you can't just count on Lewandowski. You need you know, as they say in hockey, you need that secondary scoring, right? You can't just rely on your main guy. And he's up there. Fati is not getting them right now, but Torres is a whole other issue. Because him, it's not injuries.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to make it seem so harsh about it, but to me, he just doesn't have the nasty goal-scoring streak that I want in him. You know, I feel like he's like a nice guy, you know? And sometimes, you know, I don't know, what are your feelings on that, on my perception of that, Cena?
No, he's not. It's almost as if I'm not saying he's not hungry for goals, right? But sometimes you watch him play and like, is he really hungry for a goal? Is he just like a I don't know, were you watching when Cuenca was there and Theo and all that stuff? It's like, is he just another one of them? And no disrespect by any means, you know? But is it like, okay, well, we didn't really expect Cuenca or Theo to get goals. Should we expect Ferran Torres to get goals?
You know, yes.
Was Pep right all along? I don't know.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, right? With the wing play, you know, I would say maybe, you know, obviously the more important stat is assist, right? Because you're trying to put that circle number nine. Okay, great.
He doesn't have that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, it's just, I don't know. When I think of forwards, I need goals, you know, it can't just be from the number nine, you know?
And I was looking before we went on air just to get an idea specifically about Torres in terms of, you know, how many matches he played. He has zero assists in La Liga. And I was looking, and in the past, I think it was like four matches, he's essentially played 90 minutes in four of them. And one of them, he was substituted out in the last match. So he played like 70 minutes in the last match. And then, if I'm not mistaken, 90 minutes in the three prior to that. And I cannot recall a single thing where I was like, oh, wow, that was impressive. I can't remember anything.
And also,
forget the goals, not even the assists.
Yeah, yeah. But also like the patience to stay with a player that's not giving you those numbers. You know, that's the thing. You know, this is Barcelona. This is Sunderland, where you can just play a player for 60 games and just hope he turns the corner on game 70. You know, like there's a reason why that he was on this team and people were excited. Like you said, you were. The other thing too is, you know, when I was watching him play, he does all the fundamental things that you need in a Barca winger to do. But again, I don't know if on film, because I, you know, obviously from the coach's film and so forth, that Xavi just values that much more and says the difference between him and another player not having that defense is greater. I mean, I don't know, but at the same time, I don't know. I feel like you have to turn every stone, try different matchups, try different things, because we're so limited right now on goal scoring. I mean, we're barely getting these one goals.
which is crazy to think or crazy to say, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And it happens. Look, it happens to every team where the goals from their number nine dries out, right? Yeah. It's happened to us in the past. Suarez went on a big dip, but then Messi would get goals or whoever would get the goals, right? So that's fine. But for us, when your three players up front are not scoring,
you're not
going to expect De Jong to get a goal every match either, right? You need that goal.
I mean, obviously Rafinha has been stepping up for sure. I mean, but also like, that's like a nice to have, you know, that should be a bonus, exactly. You know, he's not the pork tenderloin, if you want to say, like he's the nice truffle on the side, you know,
like, that's I can't believe you said that, but yes, it's true. A very expensive truffle.
Yeah. So finishing up, I just have a couple questions. How is Busquets still the minutes leader of this team?
Man, I was.
So because I only say this because news is coming out that he may stay for another year, and I'm a wit's end with this because, again, you have to separate the couple assists that he has here to the times that he played against elite level, and that's what we're trying to get at, right? We're trying to get it to the Champions League, and fight for trophies and stuff, and like against Cadiz and lower tier teams, he's always going to be fine. But to me, I'm baffled by this stat. I mean, the good thing, and I'm going to finish off with this, is at least we're seeing a dip in with Jordi Alba, but with Busquets, I still can't believe. You know, the other thing too, Roy, is that the Spanish national team list came out and he wasn't on it, thank God. I was about to, when I was like, look at the list. I was like,
They're rebuilding. Yeah, we can now count on them on not calling Busquets.
Oh my gosh. When I saw the list, I was like, please no Busquets. Please no. Okay, thank God. We're actually moving off the 2010 World Cup team finally. Wow. Okay.
13 years later. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a testament to Busquets, to his ability to continue playing at the highest level, right? But someone like Busquets at this age, he's not, and I don't mean this as a knock on Busquets by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not some sort of, I say this in a good way, but like a freak of nature like Modric, who's like 90 years old and somehow still playing 90 minutes every single game and performing at the absolute highest level. Busquets is what, 34 now? It's normal that he's slowed down, that he's maybe not able to play at the absolute peak as he once was, which is normal. But how is he leading this team? I have no clue. That's I don't know, man. It's not.
But you know this topic, you know,
system, right?
Yeah, but you know this topic in the NBA with load management, right? And this is the thing that I don't understand with like sports science and football now. It's like with Busquets, if we want to preserve Busquets, okay, let's preserve Busquets. But like bring him in the last 30 minutes of a match, the last 25 to close. That's where he's going to be more effective as opposed to the long 80 minutes. You know what I'm saying? You know, especially with Kessié stepping up, I would love to see Kessié get more minutes and then have Busquets close those matches out. I feel like that would be the best way you're going to get the best of Busquets to close out these important matches. Not the other way around. Having him play a lot of minutes and then by minute 75, when I saw him in person, man, he lumbers, man. He lumbers. Yeah. Lumbers, lumbers, lumbers. You could just tell, like, in his face, he's like, oh, my God, I got to run after this guy.
But it's true. And to add to what you were just saying, I mean, put it this way. If you're in the lead, okay, you have Kessié that's starting, okay, you're winning, whatever. You want to help preserve that lead, someone to help shield the ball, read the play. You'll bring Busquets in. That's great. That's absolutely great. But if you're already trailing, okay, and you know you're going to get countered, but at the same time you need a goal, are you going to play Kessié? Are you going to do that? You know what I mean? So at this point, yeah, it is better to just start Kessié, at least in certain matches. I'm not saying
sure.
in every game, but start him, rest Busquets, and then bring him on to help control the midfield, calm things down, play those passes, because he does know how to shield the ball. He is very intelligent at reading the game. It's just that his legs aren't there.
Yeah.
Right. So if you need a goal, you're trailing, you need a goal, but you need someone to help control the midfield, you bring Busquets in. How much running is he actually going to do?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's quite puzzling because, you know, for all the good things that Xavi has done with the team since the World Cup, mm-hmm. it's still these like little things that baffle me where he's still not seeing the overall picture of preserving Busquets and trying to use him at the best times possible for these important matches, you know, because I just, again, I know he has confidence because he played with him. I get that. But at the same time, like, how are you not watching the film and seeing him trail all the time, you know?
Yeah, that must not be easy as well, right, for Chad, having a friend, like, I'm guessing a very good
friend. A very good friend, yeah.
Yeah, you know, not just someone that he played a season with. But at the same time, I feel like this is something that, I don't want to say only happens to us, but for whatever reason tends to happen to us. We never really know when to let go
of Correct.
Top Correct. Players.
And then when we let go of them, we give them the worst ceremonies ever. So,
or it's, in some it's, cases, not even
none.
You know what I mean? So it's true. I mean, it's like we never know. Or when we do let them go, we let them go to like the worst team, like Suarez.
You really let Suarez go
to Atletico Madrid.
Atletico Madrid, yeah.
At the time.
This is where they need someone with like Moneyball type of thing where they say, okay, we're only doing this type of years, because this is going to go to my last topic before we end our conversation. It's just the Jordi Alba thing. I mean, obviously we've seen the resurgence of Balde, which has been absolutely fantastic. I have to tell you, watching him in person was amazing. Like, he definitely translates from the TV. He is something special. He's locked down now, right? I mean, that is crazy that we were able to just find a great left back just like that. But the other thing too, you know, Jordi Alba is going to be making 30 mil next year. And and spot starting. So, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with that, but you know, What are your feelings? I want to get your first feelings about Balde. Let's talk positively here. What are your thoughts about Balde going forward as the left back of the future?
Man, we're going to talk about Alba in just a second, but he's going to be our Alba the same way Alba was for, 10 years?
Better.
Technically, in a way, better, for sure, better.
Plays defense. So
yeah, exactly. You know, Alba was fundamental to the system, to the way
Spain
played,
yes.
The way we played at the time.
Sure.
Now it's slightly different, some different players. But yeah, you know, defensively, he's still young as well, so we're going to get some mileage out of him, right? We're going to get some mileage, and it's not like we have to spend 50 million or 100 million these days to get a semi-decent defender left back.
Think about this really quick. He puts on like 3 kilograms of muscle in his arms. Yeah, exactly. And it's going to happen because he's going to grow. You know, I'm not saying like he's got to bulk out like Troy or whatever. I'm not saying like that. I'm just saying when he starts to grow into his body even more, like he's just going to be more physical. And that really excites me because not only is his attacking just remarkable with his 1v1. I mean, the passing that he does like Alba, that's fine, whatever. But the nose that he wants to play defense, I think that's where it separates from Alba.
That's what helps. And that's what helps our front line as well. Because then you're not asking a Ferran Torres or a Rafinha, whoever's going to play on the left, Ansu Fati. Okay, well, do you guys got to track back every single time now? Right? Because Jordi Alba's up front, you know, so there's not going to be that gap. Because it genuinely looks like he likes to track back. He likes to defend, sorry. You know what I mean? You get the impression this is someone that wants to defend, not just contribute an attack. And he has that. He knows how to play that killer pass up front. He knows how to play the 1v1, like you said. But defensively as well, he knows how to put in a tackle. He's pretty smart. He's still very young. He's 19,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
18, 19. So it's exciting, man. He's someone, honestly speaking, that is going to be very, very fun to watch for the next, I don't want to say the next decade and jinx it, but at least the next 5 years. I think that's safe to say.
19,
there you go.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, him and Araujo in the back.
And Koundé.
I mean, Koundé, Jules Koundé, yeah.
Oh, my God. Koundé, too, in person.
Favorite French player at the World Cup.
Yeah. Koundé is awesome in person. The only thing is, obviously, he's been under attack a lot from Koulé just because of the lack of, I would say, like, concentration of passing. Yeah. But I think a lot has to do with just he hasn't missed a match since November, you know, plus okay. World Cup, you know. Plus so Cup, yeah. There is something to that. And plus, he's not playing out of position. I mean, what else do people want, you know? Yeah. Everyone always just makes it seem, you know, that you could just plug a player from center back and just move him right back. Like, it's FIFA, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's, maybe as fans, especially us, because we were spoiled, I guess, 10 Mascherano. Years ago now, it's crazy to say. But someone like a Mascherano, right? It's not everybody that could play defensive midfielder, you put him in the back. Or it's not everybody that could play center back and put him right back or left back, center back. It is tough. It's the positioning, the awareness, it's more to my right instead of more to my left. This guy's here. I'm accustomed to playing, I don't know, alongside Araujo, so he's going to be to my left or he's going to be to my right, so I know who to look for. It's very different.
Yeah.
Very, very different. And you're playing at the elite, the absolute
correct
level of world football. So
correct.
It's tough. It's not easy.
Well, we're definitely excited for Balde. I get 19. Jesus Christ. I just can't.
Yeah. He's half Jordi Alba's age.
Yeah. What was I doing at 19? I was, yeah. really quick, just to end your prediction for this, are we going to see a Barca typical match that we've been seeing since the World Cup where it's scrapping and clawing our way, defending like hell, and maybe just scrap a goal and getting those 3 points?
I say we get the win. Oh, I say we get the win. I say the team shows up. They know what's on the line. And look, don't get me wrong. For Madrid as well, they know if they win this, they're absolutely back in the title race, right? So they're going to be pushing for this. But I think Lewandowski gets a little break, whether it's a penalty or a weird deflected goal or something. I think he gets his goal. That inspires the team. And I think we get the 3 points out of this one.
All right. I will go on a ledge on this. I'm going to say Barca 3, Madrid 0, and I think we get a 2-goal performance from Lewandowski.
I was going to say 2-1 Lewandowski. 2-1 with 2 goals from Lewandowski.
I want to manifest this, you know, for Lewandowski. There you go. Because at worst case, we win, we get 3 points, 1-0 was ugly. I was expecting that, but let's try to turn it around a little bit. I think, I honestly think for whatever reason, we just match up really well against this Madrid team for whatever it is, you know. We saw with basically the ER starting 11 that we had at the last match with the Copa del Rey, right?
the own goal as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we were still able to hold our own. And there is this something crazy sometimes, you know, as I was talking with my friend, like world football right now doesn't have a dominant team, which is crazy because I can't remember this in my whole football lifetime. You know, I'm trying to think back, like I can't remember a time, like when you look at Champions League and leagues, they just don't equate, you know, and it's just like, okay, Man City, sure. You could say Man City, but they still haven't won the Champions League right now. And then also maybe you could say Bayern, and then it's like, I don't know. They could, you know, and they're going to face each other now in the Champions League.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's different for the past year or two. It's the shift. There's been a big shift in world football, I think.
Yeah.
And it's becoming increasingly more obvious in the Champions League. I spoke about this, you know, with my friend at the start of the season. I was talking about this actually just a couple of days ago too. I said, you know what? There's no favorite for the Champions League. I'm like, my favorite for the Champions League is Madrid because it's Madrid in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Not because they're great, but it's Madrid in the Champions League. It's that. And to quote Thierry Henry, every team in Europe fears Madrid and Madrid fears Barcelona. So
yeah, that's great. And then you have to do your like Henry like smirk when he does the joke. You know how you like,
no, I can't do that. I tried doing it. That little meme.
Yeah. He loves laughing at his own jokes. I love it. Yeah. I love it. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Roy. As always, I always enjoy our football conversations. Where can our listeners find your content online?
Yes. Well, number one, thank you for having me, Gabriel. And I'm at Twitter at Roy Nemer, so N-E-M-E-R, at Mundo Albiceleste and MundoAlbiceleste.com and YouTube.com.
Oh.
Yeah. We're dipping a toe in the YouTube pool. Been a while, but some content, some Argentina stuff, obviously.
You're only missing a TikTok channel. Like, that's the last frontier.
So TikTok's a whole other thing. We'll talk about this off here.
All right, we'll see if our predictions come true. And yeah, thanks for joining me, and we'll talk soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.